Side Radio with Phil Williams. It's hard to go wrong when you're on the right side. Right Side Radio. Solid, conservative, and just plain right.
News Talk 770 AM, 92.5 FM, WVNN, Phil Williams, Right Side Radio, solid and conservative and just plain right. Here on a Friday afternoon, 3:07 PM, hard to believe we've already got an hour down, but I'm still on the same topic. We're in the war on biblical lands. Before I do that, though, I got to tell you, I just got breaking news. It's not even news to the public yet. Just got a text from Congressman Mo Brooks, running for U.S. Senate, who is saying right now that literally the lawsuit in which Eric Swalwell, remember Swalwell, the guy who just looking at him tells me he probably got beat up a lot as a kid. But Congressman Eric Swalwell, if you remember, filed a lawsuit against Brooks and Trump and others regarding January 6th. Anyway, it's a ridiculous lawsuit. Well, I just got a text from Congressman Brooks saying that in a recent court order, the court has directed the Brooks attorneys to go ahead and file a motion to dismiss, and that if filed, that Brooks himself will be dismissed from that case completely. That's called victory, y'all. That's called I just won the case. That's a massive story. Congratulations to Congressman Mo Brooks. That's breaking news you're hearing at first on Right Side Radio right now, because I just got a text from Mo Brooks himself letting me know that and telling me that it was going to be public knowledge to go ahead and say so if needed. He's pretty stoked, you can imagine, and I don't blame him. So, congratulations to Congressman Mo Brooks running for U.S. Senate as he has beaten back the infamous, guy who slept with a Chinese spy. Who knows things. He knows things because he's Swalwell, and he's from California. Swalwell. Beat up a lot as a kid. Anyway, let me jump back on topic. Huh, that would be good, Phil. Get off the other. Charlene actually just texted me to make sure that I knew President Biden is apparently holding a press conference in about an hour on the issue of what's happening with Russia and Ukraine. So we'll come back to that. If breaking news hits, we'll bring it to you. But right now, let me jump on the concluding and the most important parts of my number one triple dipper topic for the day. War on biblical lands. So I'm looking at a story right now. I just went ahead and scrolled, and I did not see this when I was resourcing this morning. Looking at a story on the International Business Times, dated just 8 days ago. Iran unveils its new homegrown Castle Buster missile that it says can strike U.S. bases and Israel. All right. Iran has unveiled a new surface-to-surface ballistic missile with a range of 1,450 kilometers, allowing it to strike both U.S. bases in the region and targets inside Israel. The Islamic Revolutionary Guard Corps, which unveiled the missile Wednesday, has named it the Kibar Shikan, which stands for Castle Buster. And by the way, that's a reference, according to the article here, about a Jewish castle that was overrun by Muslim warriors in the early days of Islam. So what they're doing there is it's a direct inference that this is designed to be something they could target the Jewish nation with. According to the Tehran Times, a domestically manufactured missile can hit its designated target with pinpoint accuracy and extremely high speed. It's a solid fuel rocket. The Kibar Shikan is among the third generation of its missiles, and it has lesser weight, and the launch time has been reduced by 6 times. Now, we don't have any, separate or third-party confirming evidence. All we have is what they're saying, but intel does indicate that it is an actively deployable intercontinental ballistic missile, and that ain't good. Now, why do I bring that up? Not just because they have a missile. I bring it up because right now they're in the middle of nuclear negotiations. Don't you think it's a little suspicious that while they're in the middle of nuclear negotiations, that they're posturing with a missile, knowing full well and saying that it can reach to U.S. and Israel interests in the region? Well, of course it is. It's designed to intimidate. Here's who we are. Don't you know who we are? Meanwhile, lift all your sanctions, please. What the heck? I don't know who taught them how to negotiate, but this is not the way you negotiate in good faith. And the Biden administration is probably going to go ahead and go, we need to go ahead and lift all the sanctions. Maybe they'll be nice. They're not going to be nice. They're shouting death to Israel and death to United States. They're building missiles and calling them Castle Buster because that's named after Muslim warriors defeating Jewish soldiers during the early days of Islam. What does this tell you? Well, right now, a story off the almonitor.com says that optimism reigns in Iran as nuclear talks inch closer to their last station, they call it. So Iranian negotiators, according to this article, have presented new solutions to settle what they call the remaining issues in Vienna, meaning that they believe they're at they're basically rounding third, headed home. And it says, and this is part of the rhetoric that they use, any such deal, the Iranians say, is dependent upon U.S. willingness to give up its, quote, unrealistic demands and to, quote, make decisions on sanctions relief. Foreign Minister Hossein Amir Abdollahian told his British counterpart Liz Truss that the progress was due to the Iranian sides having the more rational approach and initiative. Well, the reality is this. If they're reaching the near the end, it's because the Biden administration has been negotiating from a position of weakness all along. Copper, are you still good on clip four? Highlight that for me if you're good to go on it, because that's General Jack Keane. General Jack Keane, thank you, Copper. General Jack Keane made comments on this very thing just in the last 60 days. Let's do that right now. Copper, General Jack Keane, go ahead and play clip four.
I mean, Iran is going into this deal as they always have. I mean, they're very tough negotiators. That's how we got the fundamentally flawed 2015 deal. And we find the Biden administration here today very similar to where Obama was back in 2014 when they were negotiating what became the 2015 nuclear deal. And that is, they're hungry to make a deal. And having that disposal, Iranians know that. The new regime came in and they stalled the negotiations for what reason? To gain more leverage. So here we are going into this deal. And how much has changed? First of all, Iran's economy still has major problems with it, but has been slowly recovering, principally because the Biden administration is not enforcing the Trump sanctions to the degree that they should be doing. The hardliners are certainly in control now. And they've expanded a nuclear program to the point where, as opposed to having a breakout to a nuclear weapon in over a year, it's likely just a few months, and they're enriching uranium to 60%. Weapons grade is 90, and it doesn't take much to get there. So a lot of the conditions have changed. The United States wanted to go back to the original conditions of the 2015 deal. The Iranians unlikely want to do that, and they want complete sanction relief. The administration has already flagged to the Iranian negotiators before negotiations broke down back in the summer that we would give up all sanctions. So we're going in there, I think, Dana, once again, playing a very, very weak hand.
All right, stop right there. So here's the deal. If we're playing a weak hand, we're going to lift sanctions. That boosts their economy. Their economy then fuels their ability to have nuclear research, nuclear progression, and they begin to enrich uranium to a higher degree. Now, do we have the ability to monitor? I guarantee you monitoring is going to be part of the plan, and the Biden administration is going to say, they've given us access. Oh, have they really? Do we know where all their facilities are? Meanwhile, Axios is reporting right now, Israel puts Iran's nuclear breakout time at 4 to 6 months. That's dated last week. And Israel is saying Iran is going to be breakout in 4 to 6 months with a deal. With a deal. In other words, the deal is going to strengthen Iran's ability to fund their nuclear capabilities. Times of Israel, dated yesterday, Times of Israel says Hezbollah leader Hassan Nasrallah. Hezbollah, based in the Lebanon, by the way, they're like the proxy government. They're like the proxy army. They have a bigger army, standing army, than the actual Lebanese government does. Hezbollah leader Hassan Nasrallah made a rare trip 2 months ago from his secure secret location in Beirut to Tehran, where his Iranian backers impressed on him the expectation that the Lebanese terror group will respond militarily to any Israeli strike on Iran's nuclear facilities. Here's the expectation, by the way. Israel has already signaled openly that they will not allow Iran to become nuclear capable. Israel has already said that it reserves the right unilaterally to strike Israel as needed to destroy those facilities in order to prevent them from having nuclear capability, because the same nation that they're going to have to strike is the same nation calling for death to Israel. And look at the size geographically of Israel. Do you know what one nuclear device could do to a nation that size? Literally destroy it. And so Iran's not going to let that happen. Last article I'll quote to you before we go to the break. Off the JerusalemPost.com, dated 4 days ago. If Israel strikes Iran, what happens next? So they ran a number of scenarios. They brought in experts, military and civilian, 31 experts from 13 countries, focused on three scenarios. The three scenarios were, what happens if we have a successful Israeli strike on Iran? What happens if we have a failed strike? And what happens if we have a partially successful strike? Because the question is not whether or not Israel will strike. The question is when. The experts first agreed that in the years after an Israeli military strike, regardless of its results, that the Middle East is probably going to enter into a nuclear proliferation phase as they go into a Mideast arms race. An Israeli strike is going to embolden the Iran regime to try and get to a nuclear weapon, even if they have to buy one on the black market. And for its part, fearing an Iranian nuclear retaliation against it for aligning itself with Israel, Saudi Arabia is going to seek its own nuclear program, the experts say. And then on top of that, you've got, well, okay, what happens if it's a successful strike, though? I mean, so strike of any kind creates an arms race. A successful strike, though, could lead to what they call a Saudi-Israeli normalization, meaning, hey, Israel, good job, man. Look, we're going to work with you, all right, because you get it done. However, a failed strike could have a completely negative effect on Israel's regional position, meaning that not only will a failed strike mean that Iran can go nuclear, but that the other Gulf states will see them as not being able to get it done and begin to disengage. The bottom line is this. If Israel feels compelled to act alone to stop a nuclear Iran, we're going to have a completely different geopolitical reality in the Middle East. And that's something that we have to watch. War on biblical lands. There you go, folks. Long analysis, international policy. You get a lot here on Right Side Radio. We don't just sit around and talk about what's happening in the State House in Montgomery. By golly, we give it to you, lay it on thick. All right, Copper, move us to a break. Folks, we're going to come back from that, move into the next round of the Triple Dipper. I'm going to get into the blow-by-blow in the culture war. I got some stuff you're going to want to hear. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio, solid conservative and just plain right. We'll be right back. News Talk 770 AM, 92.5 FM, WVNN, Phil Williams, Right Side Radio, solid and conservative and just plain right. Hey, listen, we've got the next section of the Triple Dipper lined up for you. I went a little long on that last section, but I'm going to jump in and tell you what it's about. I'm calling this the blow-by-blow in the culture war. It's crazy. I've had so much content the last few days. So many guests and callers and all that, which I love, by the way. That makes the show great. There ain't no complaint here, I can tell you. But there's this one section, I've not been able to get it, you know, moving. So I decided to put it number two on the list for the day. And yet, you ought to see the stack of paper I've got. I mean, I bet I've got, 20, 30 stories lined up here from news sources all over the nation, not the least of which are here in Alabama, here's the deal. Here's why I'm doing this. When wokeism happens, when liberal progressives demand certain things in our society, notoriously, the conservative side has been the weaker aspect of the argument just in terms of the pushback or the argument or the defense of the issue. We're always the ones who are, you know, getting beat up by the hyperbole and the rhetoric, you know, pushing grandma off the cliff, you know, that kind of stuff. It's all racism. You're supposed to embrace your white privilege, and just it's on and on and on. You know, you should be proud of the young transgender person who is now competing against women and winning all the medals. No, not really. And so the reality is this. In the blow-by-blow in the culture war, which is what I'm calling this section of the Triple Dipper, conservatives are fighting back. So I'm going to give you a series of... I got a stack of them. I got a vast cornucopia, a veritable plethora, a buffet, if you will, of stories about liberals and conservatives trading blows in the culture war. Not the least of which, I'll just jump on this one real quick, because, by the way, this is near and dear to my heart. 1819 News. 1819 News reporting that a transgender bathroom bill has now passed House committee in the state of Alabama. House Bill 322, filed in the Alabama House of Representatives by Representative Scott Stothagen, Republican of Hartsell, right here in our listening area, has 47 co-sponsors. Let me tell you what happened a few years ago when I was in the Senate. I got lampooned. I got ridiculed. I had Matt Murphy on the radio down in Birmingham hang up on me while I was on the air talking about being the only person in the legislature, me, the only person in the legislature who dared to bring a transgender bathroom bill because it was a growing issue and I could see it coming. I'll never forget Matt Murphy. Matt, if you're listening, I know you're not, but I love you, but you were a knucklehead on this issue because you literally told me on the air that all I had was a solution in search of a problem, and this wasn't not an issue in Alabama. Well, guess what it is? Yes, it is, and we all know it is, and it was back then too. Luckily for me, as my bill did not have any co-sponsors, no one wanted me to bring it up. They all hated the idea that I was putting them in that position. Literally, what happened was the Trump administration took office and began to fight the battle, and it did not become necessary to pursue that bill anymore because the same things that were happening began to get curtailed by official policy. Hey, Copper, I got some clips on the board, by the way. Make sure you see those. All that to say, according to Representative Stothagen from Hartsell, there have been several reports of sexual assault or rape in school classrooms based on someone entering a restroom that was not assigned to their sex. He cited in his debate in the House committee, he cited seven incidents that have taken place in Morgan and Coleman counties alone. Okay. That being said, be aware, this is a pushback. As you're beginning to see liberal, and I know, by the way, I know for a fact of one school system right here in our listening area, and I won't name it because they did back off, but they were being convinced by an activist mother who had been dressing her five-year-old little boy as a girl for years that he had to have access to the bathroom, the girl's bathroom. The school system was about to capitulate until people found out. This is not a solution in search of a problem. It's something going on right here, right now, in Alabama, of all places. And we've got a bill that made it out of committee with 47 co-sponsors. We'll see where it goes. Transgender bathrooms. That's number one in the blow-by-blow in the culture war. More on that, Right Side Radio. Solid conservative, just plain right. I've going to give you an earful of the fight. We'll be right back. News Talk 770 AM, 92.5 FM, WVNN, Phil Williams, Right Side Radio, solid, conservative, and just plain right. Hey, Copper, grab the mic there and tell me what's Tim asking me. Oh, I see what you're saying. So apparently we had a caller call in. Tim is listening, and he asked about the bill that I mentioned a minute ago being carried by Representative Stothagen in the Alabama State House. It deals with transgender bathrooms. No, Tim, to answer your question, if I understand it correctly, it does not deal at all with whether someone can or cannot choose to be transgender. What it says is, and by the way, this is the law in the state of Alabama. The law is that we have a right to security, and so the question is, can we see biological males use female restrooms? And that's the thing that the bill addresses. It does not agree with whether or not someone can be transgender or not. Is that what you're asking, Copper? The bill says right now that current facilities cannot be mixed. That's what it says. Okay. All right. There you go. I tell you what, moving forward, though, in the blow-by-blow in the culture war, I got a bunch of stuff from all over the nation. Now, you're hearing a lot, by the way. A minute ago, I told you about that transgender bathroom bill. I would call that an effort by the conservative side of the aisle to push back on what liberals are trying to do on transgender bathrooms. All right, how about other things? Here's one that, by the way, shows what liberals are willing to do back to conservatives on other issues. You may recall that up in Canada, and by the way, today it's gotten pretty ugly. Apparently they're making lots of arrests. But the Canadian Freedom Convoy has been ongoing now for about the last 3 weeks. It's captured the attention of the world. And the Canadian Freedom Convoy, by the way, has been supported financially by millions of dollars being flooded in, mostly by small donors. 46% of the $9 million currently collected on the website GiveSendGo came from small donations from American citizens, 46% of them. The rest of them came from people in Canada. Well, interesting thing is, somehow or another, GiveSendGo got hacked. Huh. How'd that happen? It got hacked, and in an effort to dox a whole lot of people, the liberals published the names and contact information for all the donors. For what reason? For what reason? So that people could begin to terrorize them for daring to support something that is considered conservative in nature. That's why. Copper, you got clip one good to go there? Clip one. Listen, this is the kind of thing that liberals do when you dare to just send $10 to support a conservative cause like the Freedom Convoy. This woman owns a gelato shop. She's like basically an ice cream shop owner. And she's dealing with death threats right now. Play clip one.
I think never in my 56 years have I ever experienced a country so divided. So full of hatred towards friends and neighbors. Sorry, I lost you there. So full of hatred towards their friends and neighbors. You know, they may have opinions that differ from theirs, but they're so willing to publicly shame and humiliate and spew forth angry vitriol. You know, we have been called terrorist for the first 36 hours. We were inundated with hatred, with threats of violence. People threatened our team on the phone, telling them we're coming to get you. We're going to throw bricks through your window. You'll pay for this, you Nazi supporter. I personally have been called a disgusting pig of a woman and that I should rot in hell. Our rural shop out in Merrickville, Ontario, someone draped a large bed sheet over our sign. I'm sorry. It's been a tough few days. And I think, you know, and the sign read, Tammy supports terrorists. Now, Mama Bear is going to dig out her claws on that one. And we're getting the video surveillance and the incident, and we will pursue that with the police. But
so, yeah, that's what liberals will try and do. I mean, the audacity of hacking into a donation site, getting all the names and publishing them for no other reason than to encourage people to dox the good, solid folks who literally gave something out of their own pocket to support a conservative cause. I got news. Some of those liberals are going to try to throw a brick through the wrong window, and it's going to get ugly real fast. It's that kind of attitude that brought up the whole Kyle Rittenhouse thing. I mean, literally, when people begin to take the law into their own hands, bad things happen. And so don't push that hard, liberals, because you may find out that it doesn't go well for you. But in the meantime, that's part of what I'm saying about the blow-by-blow. Here's another story, going from a different angle, different story. JustTheNews.com reporting as of yesterday, Illinois House Speaker has been sued by Republican lawmakers because they were ejected from the House chamber for not wearing masks. Well, are we not past this yet? The Illinois House Speaker is now facing a lawsuit after Democrats voted to eject 9 members who refused to follow the chamber's mask rule. So 3 days of debate, literally 3 days of debate about the House rules in Illinois requiring masks and temperature checks and social distancing. Still, good Lord, people. And they basically finally said, look, we're not doing this anymore. We're done. We're here for the people's business. Let's stop the charade. Let's get the work done of the people. And 9 of them were ejected by the speaker. And after that, it says that later in the day, Attorney Thomas DeVore, who was already winning lawsuits against the governor's office regarding mask mandates, filed suit against House Speaker Emanuel Welch, a Democrat, and saying that Speaker Welch has no authority whatsoever to place quarantine measures. So there you go. Blows being exchanged over mask mandates, even in the House of Representatives in Illinois. How about this? Here's another one from right here in Alabama. 1819news.com. Reporting on something that I touched on just the other day. That literally there is a program right now that is becoming known. People are watching for it and going, oh, I saw that on the news elsewhere and it's here. It's called SEL, Social Emotional Learning. It's a program used to train teachers in the public school system. And in Alabama, several grassroots organizations have begun to identify where it is. And right now, one of the main places where they're protesting the idea of SEL being instituted or used is in Mountain Brook. Mountain Brook has already been successful at getting critical race theory curriculum out of their schools. So what's happening this weekend, by the way, this weekend is the State Republican Party's winter meeting. Charlene and I will be there. And there's a resolution that's being brought that requests that all House and Senate Republicans support the Alabama Education Freedom Bill, which eliminates the SEL model, because what it promotes is, it says, social engineering, diversity, equity, and same-sex marriage, etc., without the knowledge of the parents. In other words, those are conversations that teachers are being trained to have with young children that promote sexuality even prior to puberty. And they're saying, wait a minute. How about you get us out of 50th in the nation in reading, writing, and arithmetic, and stop focusing on things that we as parents will talk to our kids about in a manner in which we feel is fitting to the standards and the traditions and the values of our family. Well, it's going on right now, and they're fussing over it right now in Mountain Brook, trading blows in the culture war. Here's another one, and I've got a great clip that we're going to play for you in just a second. First of all, I'm amazed at the fact that we have transgender athletes just destroying female sports. I got a story here. I pulled this one off of Fox. Dated today by a lady who is a world-class athlete herself. She starts off, she wrote the piece, but she says, I'm a mom, a coach, and a Team USA World Masters track athlete. She says, if male-bodied athletes continue competing on female teams, it will be the end of women's sports. She said, this is no exaggeration. This is reality. It's happening right now. She says at the 2018 World Masters Athletics, she competed in the 200-meter race, and she had to compete against a male-bodied athlete, is the way she describes it, her quotes. And she barely won by a few tenths of a second. But the next year, that same athlete beat one of her teammates. She said, my teammate had trained harder than anyone I know. It was not just on the world stage that I experienced a demoralizing trend of male-bodied athletes displacing females from their own competitions. It was also on my home island of Maui, Hawaii. She said she watched her daughter, who's also growing up to be a great athlete in her own right. A year and a half after having her own experience, she said, in Spain against a male-bodied athlete, she had to watch her daughter lose to a biological male. She said she literally watched her daughter train hard, make personal and difficult sacrifices to try and compete on the level that her mom had also been doing for years, and then lose to a male-bodied athlete. She said, here's a quote. I'm going to end with this on her letter, her thing. How can you win as a female when you're lined up next to a male body whose strength, heart, and lung capacity and pace are all greater than your own, no matter what treatments they might go through? How good is that point? At the same time, they not only try to divide us by pretending that males are females and then destroy women's sports, but then you've got the issue of dividing us on critical race. Recently, the story on TheBlaze.com, just a few days ago, says the University of Virginia paid Ibram X. Kendi, a major racist and race baiter who is a promoter of critical race theory, they paid him the equivalent of $541 per minute, to give what they called an anti-racist lecture. Well, people are pushing back on that. So there you have two examples of liberals pressing themselves in on the fight in the culture war. But Copper, clip two, before we go to the break, I want to play clip two. How much time is clip two going to last? Let me see here. Clip two is going to take it's about a minute and a half. I'll tell you what, it fits. Copper, clip two, let's do it. Play clip two. This is a dad speaking to a school board. Go ahead, Copper. I'm sorry.
Heard.
Biracial. I'm bilingual, I'm multicultural. The fact is, in America, in North Carolina, I can do anything I want, and I teach that to my children. And the person who tells my little pecan color kids that they're somehow oppressed based on the color of their skin would be absolutely wrong and absolutely at war with me. What the mask showed us is that the parents, the most powerful group of people in our country, that they're taking back the wheel. If you believe in CRT, I want to tell you, you're a liar, because that means you look at your black neighbor and say that they're oppressed, and you look at your white neighbor and say that they're evil, regardless of the experience that you've had with them. And we're not going to do that. I have an 8-year-old daughter who is absolutely dynamic, who can do anything athletically, intellectually, spiritually, and emotionally. She is a dynamo. And I don't want a man swimming against her in the pool. The fact is, I don't want her playing against boys in soccer. I don't even let my sons rough her up. Do you think I'm going to let your son rough her up? If you think people who love America are willing to fight for it, you haven't met parents yet.
That man, Brian Echeverria, has also announced he's running for his state's General Assembly. He joins us now. Brian, did you hear me clapping? I was clapping here. That was an amazing speech. Unbelievable. Man. What was also significant about it, though, is how it revealed all the challenges. I mean, you ticked off the, you went to the transgender athletes, to the schools, to the CRT. So what compelled you to deliver this now?
You know, it's just that time. We have to win this moment. And when I think about the life that I want for my children, every time I turn around, someone's saying something to take that from them. And I believe that most parents agree that we're not going to stand and let that happen.
Well, Copper, go ahead and move us to a break. What a great way to end. That was a classic example of a conservative saying, enough. I'm biracial. My children, what are we telling our black and white neighbors? What why do you want a male to swim against my daughter? What a great speech. And now he's running for office. Praise God. We need people like that, because he's willing to stand up in the culture war and trade blows. And that's what we got to do, because I got news. If we don't, they're going to keep hitting us anyway. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. More of this when we get back. Hang on. News Talk 770 AM, 92.5 FM, WVNN, Phil Williams, Right Side Radio, solid, conservative, and just plain right. 3:55 p.m. right now, moving to the top of the hour. We're still in number two on the Triple Dipper, which I call trading blows in the culture war. And what I mean by that is this, that for years it seemed like, and it was so frustrating, to feel like conservatives always... You know, we gotta take this easy now. We don't want to push back too hard. And by the way, I'm not saying violence. I'm not talking about whether or not we should, you know, lash out and dox people or do all. No, but what I am saying is this: how about we stop just taking it all lying down? Well, now I would say right now it has gotten to the point that we are trading blows. It's not a matter of being on the ropes and trying to just evade the punches. We're trading blows. And that's a significant change, by the way. Conservatives have about had it, and I'm looking right now at something that I get daily updates. One is from a group called People United for Privacy, and they send out, you know, aggregate updates of different stories that kind of relate. And they're talking about this thing I talked about earlier, where I had the lady on who had been doxxed, and how disturbing it was to have her business attacked, her employees attacked, to be harassed, to be had to have threatening letters and messages sent to her personally at her home, all because, what did she do? She gave $250 to the Freedom Convoy. Well, what you may not also realize is the Washington Post didn't waste any time at all. They apparently began harassing individuals by calling people, and they also published a story, literally published a story, with all of the names of people who had given to the different to the Freedom Convoy. Didn't matter whether they had given $50 or the biggest one who gave $90,000. They started making calls asking them why they did it. That's designed. There's no other reason to do that except to put a chilling effect on the support of a conservative movement. Senator Ted Cruz just got outraged at it, and he went ahead and even took the unusual step of agreeing with Congresswoman Ilhan Omar, who had tweeted out in the past, and he went and got it and tweeted it out again himself, where she pointed out that harassing small donors is the only reason to expose small donors is to encourage people to harass them. Well, she was right, and so is he. Well, then I also noticed in this, for the first time, I see a link now to this. Oh my gosh. I mean, you could watch the video, but you can go, if you're on Twitter, there's a thing, there's a Twitter handle that I follow called Libs of TikTok. It's sad and scary all at the same time. But this guy with pink hair sitting in front of all his computers, constantly twitching and moving himself like he's got some kind of like he's got bugs in his pants. But he's looking at the screen doing a Facebook Live, and people are sending questions, and he is, or Instagram Live, I guess, and they're sending him questions, and he's screaming in the microphone that he's the one that exposed the list, and he would do it 100 times again, screaming, literally. The man's disturbed, but that's what they do, and we've got to be prepared to deal with it. Now, other things are happening, though. What's interesting to me in the trading of blows, and by the way, I will point out, I mean, let me stop myself real quick and point out, the President of the United States is making his speech right now, and since we're up against the break, what I'm going to do is check during the break and see where that speech is going. If there's anything to report to you when we get back from this news break, I will jump in and give you that. And I'll continue for a little bit longer when we get back on trading blows. You're going to want to hear what's Bill Maher saying. And oh, by the way, what did Twitter just do? And then on top of that, how about the war on cops because of defund police? And then on top of that, how about I play another clip from that dad who spoke out at the school board meeting? And you're going to love what he had to say about race not being the issue. We can still live the dream, despite what liberals say. All right, folks, Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Solid conservative and just plain right. You stay tuned. We got a whole lot more.